to Men on Football.
The show that looks at football from a male point of view.
That's right, tonight we're live and uncensored.
That's right, naked to the world.
Peek-a-boo!
You know, we have a new sponsor, Wilson Sporting Goods, the official balls of the NFL.
I ain't said a word.
You know, a lot of people were very surprised to hear that we was doing a special football show. But we've been fans of football for many years. I mean, what other game boasts such great names like Dick Butkus?
Or my favorite, Bob Greasy.
Now, isn't he a tight end?
He was. Still, there's a lot of things about this game that could be better, like the uniforms.
Hated him.
For instance, you know, I was so disappointed when I found out that those numbers on the back, they were just for identification.
Oh, I know what you mean. The smallest one I saw was 11, and then I saw one that said 78 child, I almost fainted.
You need to stop.
We passing through the night. He picked me up, we made me feel so lucky.
Seven,
he kissed me in his
six,
we be making love it.
Five,
still the one I thought it.
Four,
I'm trying to make us
three,
from that
two,
still the one.
Injection, fellas.
I painted this on canvas before I wrote it. I soaked it in your dreams and stroked it into a masterpiece. And after each moment, I pointed back at the canvas like, this looks beautiful, don't it? Lord, it can't be done in finger paint or watercolors. It has to be done in acrylic. The message has to be textured so even when you feel stressed, you can feel it. And any layer that's not perfect, I'll peel it and repaint. I need it to be in sync with the movement of your colors, baby. I am not like any other. I will hold you in a perfect light like this easel, and perhaps you believe trusting your life to an artist is unreasonable, but I don't even need you to actually love me. I only need you to really believe you do. And trust, I will use this brush like blush. My foundation is far realer than concealer. My touch will line your eyes, and ain't no need for mascara when you're in the presence of a healer. I will make you the darling of exhibits and the constant conversation of art critics, and all I ask is that you bring your true self whenever you pay my studio a visit. Baby, this is bigger than the Mona Lisa. Honestly, you should only be painted in murals. Baby, this is bigger than American dollars. Honestly, I chose to buy all these art supplies in euros. You are so gorgeous that viewings of your likeness should only be accompanied by an orchestra and a chorus and rose petals on the floor with cases of the finest wine before it. And all I ask is that you allow me to use these words to paint your essence while you sit back and relax comfortably in my presence and enjoy it.
This is the conspiratorial view of history as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Suffering in connection with the flood, of course, from all over the country. And undoubtedly there is a lot of it going on, but these people down here seem to be a little different. They're the type of people that life hasn't held very much for. And it's certainly a pitiful scene to see them now as they're brought into these relief centers cold and with insufficient clothing, and many of them have children, of course. It really is a pitiful scene. This afternoon, another member of WMC staff and myself, for instance, took out a mother and her five-day-old baby. They were located just about a quarter of a mile from this Big Lake levee about which I've spoken, and they were in imminent danger of being flooded. The father came into where we were located with our shortwave transmitter and asked if we could get in touch with the Red Cross authorities here at Blytheville and get them an ambulance. But facilities, of course, are taxed to their utmost, and in order to save time, we drove down there, put an extra seat in the back of the car, and the mother and this little baby were brought out in the wagon, about a mile and a half, the house was, from the road, brought out to the road in the wagon, and then we had to lift the whole bed and everything bodily into the back of the car and bring them into town. And those are the conditions that we're seeing every day. I don't mean to take an alarming attitude, because as a matter of fact, as far as danger to life and limb is concerned, the toll seems to be very moderate throughout the country, I would say, considering the conditions. But there is a lot of suffering, and we can't, of course, close our eyes to that fact. The Red Cross, incidentally, and the U.S. engineers are doing a magnificent piece of work, particularly throughout this territory, and of course that's the only thing that I'm able to speak about with any degree of accuracy. Their facilities are taxed to the utmost, and by the way, I might here repeat an announcement by Major Burdick of the U.S. engineers. It's addressed to people living in the Birch Point, New Madrid area floodway, which is just north of here, and immediately south of the point where the Ohio River and the Mississippi converge. These people are warned to evacuate immediately. Now, this is very important. They're urged not to wait to collect their belongings, but simply to evacuate because there's immediate danger of this area being flooded. That is addressed to anybody who might be listening and who lives in the Birch Point, New Madrid area floodway. Many of the refugees in this section are being cared for in boxcars that the railroads have placed there for their use, and they've just pulled them along in switches, and these people have lit fires in them, and you can see these strings of boxcars pulled up alongside the highways. And as you go by, these little kids poke their faces out at you and wave, and it really is a sight that one couldn't very well forget very easily. The situation down here now, as far as additional floodwaters is concerned, is that the ditches and all the depressions in the ground, of course, are covered with surface water, so that should a thaw occur in the very near future, it won't be long before the floodwaters reach an alarming stage, because there's nowhere for them to go, of course. These stores down here in these small towns throughout this section are throwing their doors open to these refugees, and it's really, I can't pass this broadcast without saying a word in praise of the citizens of the towns in the immediate location, or in the immediate vicinity of the flooded districts. They're all doing a fine piece of work, and it really is the sort of situation that compels respect and sort of rebuilds your faith in human nature. And now I see my time's about up. Immediately after this broadcast, Chief Engineer Clyde Baker and myself are going to pack up our shortwave equipment and go to Osceola and board a U.S. engineer's barge, where we hope to get into some of the flooded territory north of here that's inaccessible by road. This has been a Red Network presentation of the National Broadcasting Company. We return you now to Chicago.
The program regularly scheduled for this period will not be heard.
This time-lapse video shows the accumulation of snow and frost in New York's Times Square over 5 hours on Monday. New York, Philadelphia, and other cities are now shutting down as a monster blizzard threatens to bring misery to some 35 million people in the region. The National Weather Service has predicted heavy wind gusts and as much as 11 inches of snow for Boston and 8 inches of snow for New York City. More than 7,700 flights in and out of the Northeast were cancelled, and many of them may not take off again until Wednesday. New York airports are among the worst affected. Officials have called the blizzard crippling and potentially historic. They have ordered workers to go home early, banned travel, and closed bridges and tunnels.
Snow can wait, I forgot my mittens. Wipe my nose, get my new boots on. I get a little warm in my heart when I think of winter. I put my hand in my father's glove. I run off where the drifts get deep. Sleeping Beauty trips me with a frown. I hear a voice, you must learn to stand up for yourself, 'cause I can't always be around. He says, when you gonna make up your mind? When you gonna love you as much I do? When you gonna make up your mind? 'Cause things are gonna change so fast. All the white horses are still in bed. I tell you that I'll always want you near. You say that things is getting thin. When you gonna make up your mind? When you gonna love you as much as I do? When you gonna make up your mind? 'Cause things are gonna change so fast. Tell you that I'll always want you near. You say that things change, my dear. Oh,
But these muffins are delicious.
And we'll share our favorite recipes later in the hour. But first, our guest says, don't give in to road rage. Stay calm behind the wheel and coolly plot your road revenge.
Mm.
Danny Preston is a defensive driving instructor who teaches people how to control their temper behind the wheel. Welcome, Danny.
Well, thanks for having me.
Danny, we've all been there. There's nothing I hate more than getting cut off.
That drives me nuts. I want to scream out my window.
But ultimately, getting into an argument with a stranger isn't going to accomplish anything but stress you out.
Well, how should you respond instead?
Yeah.
Take a deep breath, count to 10, then follow the other driver home.
Well, you don't want to get into a fight on the highway.
Right. Once you know where he lives, you could sneak into his house every couple weeks, rearrange a bunch of things. Something that says, you're out there, and you're unpredictable.
Sounds like that's safer than losing your temper.
Anger's just one letter away from danger.
Ooh.
I like that.
You want to stay zen, keep your mind clear, and put a plan in place that will ruin the other driver's chance at a happy future.
Now, you also talk a lot about empathy, putting yourself in the other driver's shoes.
Exactly, Jim. Just last week, I was waiting for a stoplight to change when some angry driver behind me was leaning on the horn.
I hate that.
But then, I remembered, he's human, just like me. He has a family that loves him, and that's an exploitable weakness. I started sending him videotapes, hours-long videotapes filmed outside his parents' home.
Huh.
Now, he's frantic and confused, but I always say you can't give angry drivers the satisfaction of knowing why their parents are being filmed, which is why I call him every night from a payphone and just recite a series of cryptic numbers that don't mean anything.
Calm, cool, collected. I love it.
Well, getting cut off is one thing, but how do you possibly stay calm during a fender bender that wasn't your fault?
Oh, boy, I need this one.
Of course. It's hard to keep a cool head in that situation. You'll feel the urge to slam into the jerk's car right where you see the baby seat. But you don't want to do anything that could get somebody hurt on the road. Instead, you should murder the person's next-door neighbor. When he moves someplace safer, you follow him and you kill his next door neighbor again. And again. Now he can't escape death and he has no idea who you even are.
Oh, that is a great driving tip.
Now, something a lot of people want to know, what if someone's getting angry about your driving?
You can't let it get to you. For example, in 1996, some guy gave me the middle finger after I cut him off. I recognized him from TV. That's when I decided to become a defensive driving instructor, developing the skills I needed to eventually be invited on his show as an expert. Now, once you're there, it's just a simple matter of switching out his muffins with the ones you made yourself. Those muffins were pretty good, weren't they, Jim? How many did you eat?
What? I don't know.
Thank you so much for sharing your tips, Danny.
Danny is not my true name.
Stick shifts and safety belts, bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving. In the car, it makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat.
Have released this horrifying video of the moment an enraged driver slammed his brakes on in front of a moving lorry. The incident happened on the M5 during the summer when one driver's road rage nearly cost him his life. The heart-stopping video shows a blue Citroen swerving and braking in front of the lorry, which was travelling at 60 miles per hour, before speeding off just inches from the front of the HGV. A police spokesman said not only was the driver putting his life on the line, but also that of his wife in the passenger seat and other road users who could have been caught up in the carnage. He was ordered to carry out 100 hours of unpaid work, handed a 12-month driving ban, and left with a £145 bill for court costs. He must also retake his driving test.
But when we're driving in my Malibu, it's easy to get right next to you. I say, baby, scoot over, please. And then she's right there next to me. I need you here with me, not way over in the bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. Alright. Cars are Japanese. Yeah, but when we're driving far, I need my baby. I need my baby next to me.
This shocking video captures the moment a driver narrowly avoids death when a lorry veers onto the hard shoulder of a motorway. The CCTV footage released by West Midlands Police shows a roadside recovery driver stationed in the emergency lane when suddenly a lorry driver swerves off the inside lane and across the hard shoulder, ploughing into the mechanic, breaking his back in two places before driving off. Police have said the recovery driver is lucky to be alive and has been unable to work since the crash in April last year. Lorry driver Terence Pullman has pleaded guilty to causing serious injury and dangerous driving from the collision. He was jailed last week for 8 months and banned from driving for 2 years.
Well, stick shifts and safety belts, bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving in the car. It makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me.
This surveillance footage captures the moment a man is dragged 200 meters by a taxi down a busy road in China. The victim had been driving the number 12 bus in the area when he says it was scratched by the taxi at a crossing. When he got off his bus to confront the taxi driver, the driver suddenly started the engine, knocking the bus driver onto the hood and driving for 4 or 5 metres. The victim said his whole body was lying on the engine hood and that he held it firmly, adding that he felt very scared. He then got down from the hood and tried to open the door of the cab, but the driver sped up and dragged him about 200 metres. I opened the door and seized him, but he scolded at me and drove away, Guo said. A female passerby called the emergency services and Guo was treated for injuries to his hands and legs. Police have watched the surveillance tape and are now investigating the incident. An asteroid measuring about a third of a mile in diameter made a relatively close but harmless pass by Earth on Monday.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom!
It passed about 745,000 miles from Earth, roughly three times farther away than the Moon. The asteroid, which could only be seen through a small telescope or binoculars, is known as 2004 BL86. During the flyby, scientists even discovered that the asteroid had a moon of its own. Asteroid 2004 BL86, which orbits the Sun every 1.84 years, was discovered 11 years ago by the Linear Telescope in New Mexico. Scientists plan to map the asteroid's surface with radar during the flyby in hopes of learning more about its size, shape, and rate of rotation. NASA said it will be the largest asteroid to pass this close to Earth until asteroid 1999 AN10 flies by in 2027.
images ever acquired of the largest asteroid in the solar system have been revealed. NASA's Dawn spacecraft has returned the sharpest images ever seen of the dwarf planet Ceres. The images were taken 147,000 miles from Ceres on January 25th. At 43 pixels wide, the new images are more than 30% higher in resolution than those taken by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope in 2003 and 2004. The resolution is higher because Dawn is travelling through the solar system to Ceres, while Hubble remains fixed in Earth's orbit. The new Dawn images come on the heels of initial navigation images taken on January 13th that reveal a white spot on the dwarf planet and the suggestion of craters. According to NASA, they represent a new milestone for a spacecraft that soon will become the first human-made probe to visit a dwarf planet.
And now let's go to explore the Mars. We've long been searching for life beyond our Earth. A set of photos recently released by NASA has renewed intrigue about whether Mars really holds the answer. In these images taken by NASA navigation camera, you can make out a human-shaped shadow standing next to the Mars Curiosity rover. It looks like a male figure with no helmet, but an air tank. And the so-called he seems to be repairing the probe. The images have got some theorists excited. This is indeed proof life does exist on Mars. The scientists say the shadows are just playing a trick on our imagination. The Mars Curiosity rover has sent back many photos to NASA since it landed on the Mars surface in 2012.
This symbol, commonly called a yin-yang symbol, is a taijitu, meaning diagram of the supreme ultimate. The principle of yin and yang, opposites existing in harmony, is associated with ancient Chinese philosophy, but the very first use of the iconography, the classic symbol, actually comes from a shield pattern used by the ancient Romans, 700 years before its first known use in China. A connection between the two has yet to be found. Regardless of who came up with it first, the symbol was a bright idea. But what's the brightest object in the entire universe? Well, apparent magnitude, commonly used when stargazing, refers to how bright an object appears to us, say when looking up from Earth. It depends on Earth-centric factors like how close the object is to our planet. Magnitudes are logarithmic and arranged like golf, where a smaller number means a greater brightness. But today, I'm looking for absolute magnitude, a measure of how bright things all over the universe, near and far, would be if we looked at them from the same distance. Absolute magnitude will guide us to the most blinding light in the universe, irrespective of it looking faint to us here on Earth just because it's far away. The difference is significant. A 100-watt light bulb placed closer than 8 centimeters, about 3 inches from your eye, will appear brighter than the sun in the sky. But that's not fair. If you could see the sun and the bulb from the same distance, the sun would be a septillion times brighter. That's bright. But the sun shines punily compared to the rest of the cosmos. If you could line the sun up with everything else out there, giving every star and cosmological phenomenon a fair chance, the sun's absolute magnitude would be 4.8. Not bad, but check out R136A1. This nuclear-fueled beast isn't the biggest star in terms of volume, but it's 256 times more massive than our sun. It's the most massive star ever found, and it's also the brightest. Remember that lower absolute magnitudes are brighter. R136A1 isn't 4.8 like our sun. It is negative 12.6, which means it is 8.7 million times brighter than our own sun. But R136A1 isn't the brightest thing out there. When a giant star dies, it explodes violently in what is known as a supernova or hypernova. As I mentioned in my video, How Hot Can It Get?, supernovas can eject terrifying flashes of radiation known as gamma ray bursts, arguably the brightest electromagnetic events in the universe. A typical gamma ray burst releases as much energy in a few seconds as our sun will release all together in its entire 10 billion year lifetime. If WR104, a gamma ray burst future candidate, directly struck Earth with such a beam for only 10 seconds, astronomers predict it could deplete 25% of our ozone layer and lead to mass extinction and starvation. The largest thermonuclear bomb ever detonated didn't do anything close to that, and it was exploded right here in our atmosphere. Whereas WR104 is 8,000 light years away. You can't even see it with your naked eye or a pair of binoculars. But gamma ray bursts are merely brief events lasting only a few minutes at most, sometimes just a matter of milliseconds. If you want the brightest, sustained thing, you'll paradoxically have to look at the darkest thing, black holes. To be fair, dark matter is ostensibly darker, but because dark matter has been hypothesized to not even interact with light, with electromagnetism at all, calling dark matter not bright is kind of like calling your peanut butter sandwich a not fast airplane. It's not really even the same category. Black holes, however, do interact with light, reflecting so little, well, they don't let any escape, at least not in a form resembling the way it came in. That's dark. But the intense energies created by black holes in the process of eating things like stars is anything but dark. Gas and debris from the stars they eat swirl into archipluvian cosmic gallows known as accretion disks before making their final death plunge into the black hole. In the disk, debris spins at unfathomable speeds, pulled around by a black hole billions of times more massive than our sun. Friction in the accretion disk generates heat on a level difficult to fully appreciate. Just as hot things glow, the disk does too, so brightly it has its own name, a quasar. Quasars shine thousands of times more brightly than even the brightest stars. I'm kidding. It's scarier than that. Quasars shine thousands of times more brightly than galaxies containing billions of stars. The first identified quasar, 3C273, has an absolute magnitude of -26.7, making it 4 trillion times brighter than our sun, about 100 times more luminous than the total amount of light produced by the entire Milky Way. If you put 3C273 33 light years away from us, it would shine as brightly as our sun, a mere 8 light minutes away. Blocking the brightness of a quasar with a coronagraph reveals that quasars exist in the centers of galaxies that are larger than them in area, but are nonetheless drowned out by their light. Such galactic centers are called active galactic nuclei, the bulk of their energy spewing forth in the form of a powerful radiation jet, the length of which puts even our solar system to shame. The visible part of the jet in this photograph, for instance, is so long it could stretch from the Sun to Pluto and back 1.5 million times. Now, specifically, if a large portion of this ejected energy heads toward Earth, it's responsible for what we call a quasar. But if Earth is right in the active galactic nucleus's sights, it's got a scarier name, a blazar. And it's blazar 3C454.3 that clocked in the greatest brightness ever observed. At historically high levels of activity, it registered an absolute magnitude of -31.4. To put the brightness of quasars in yet another perspective, take a look at the 100,000th picture snapped by the Hubble telescope. This is a star a few hundred light years away, and this thing looks just about as bright, but it is a quasar 9 billion light years away. Why are quasars so far away? Well, a quasar is not forever. They are billions of light years away, which means the light we receive from them, the pictures we take of them, are pictures of things happening billions of years ago. They represent a phenomenon more common early in the universe's history, when monster black holes hadn't eaten all the stars around them to fuel their accretion disks, and before those holes became too fat to be active. Neil deGrasse Tyson points out that in order to remain a quasar producer, a black hole must consume about 10 stars a year. Many consume more than 1,000 stars a year, 600 Earths worth of matter every single minute. The more stars a black hole consumes, the larger its event horizon becomes, until eventually it no longer shreds stars apart to fuel an accretion disk. Instead, it just swallows them whole in one dimmer but still terrifying gulp. Quasars are some of the most ancient things in our universe. If you could teleport instantaneously to one right now, faster than light, it would most likely no longer be burning. What we see are just their ghosts, light that left when they were active, that traveled longer than they could live. But quasars can still be born. They can even be born right here, in fact. In my video, What Will We Miss?, I pointed out that the Andromeda Galaxy is headed our way. In 3 to 5 billion years, it will collide with our own galaxy, the Milky Way, and the collision could rearrange stars near the galaxy's central black holes to be consumed, reigniting a quasar right here in our galactic backyard. Funny enough, right now, very few of us even see Andromeda, even though all you need is your unaided eye. Light from our cities drowns out the night sky like a quasar drowns out its host galaxy. Artist Thierry Cohen mocked up what big cities would look like if all their lights were off and the sky above them could be seen fully. New York, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Tokyo, Los Angeles. It's beautiful and rare. In the 1990s, during a blackout in the city of Los Angeles, a number of residents actually called the police. They were afraid of mysterious glowing clouds hovering above the city. They were seeing our galaxy for the first time in their lives. At night, artificial lights allow us to see what's around us, but we lose what's above us. The brightest places have the darkest, emptiest skies. There's yin and yang again. A Taijitu has actually been lurking in this video the entire time. The brightest things in the universe, quasars, are caused by the darkest things in the universe, black holes. The process that unshackles the most light is caused by the thing that best imprisons it.
Light is magic. There is magic in the way it is created, in the way it travels, the way it behaves. And beyond the magic of light itself, there is the magic of science, finding new and amazing uses for light, the life giver. Sunlight is a mixture of several different kinds of light. Most familiar is the visible light, the kind of light we see and see by. Then, as modern sun worshippers know, sunshine contains an invisible form of light called ultraviolet. Ultraviolet light produces tan skins and those healthy little things called vitamins. Science has learned how to produce this invisible form of light artificially. And now, without leaving our homes, we can turn winter into summer. The scientific ultraviolet light generator is arranged to remove all of the visible light and project a strong beam of invisible black magic light. One of the most amazing things about ultraviolet light is its ability to help us see things which by ordinary light are impossible to see. The radiations of pure ultraviolet light produce a strange effect called fluorescence. Fluorescence is a glow such as is found in the figures of an illuminated clock dial. Many different chemicals respond to the radiations of ultraviolet light. Different chemicals seem to respond with a different glow. This fluorescent effect makes it possible to read many secret or hidden messages. The ink with which the hidden message is written seems to glow under the magic rays. By the same principle on altered documents, erasures and changes may be brought out so that the attempted alteration is clearly visible. Mixed in with the visible sunlight and the ultraviolet light is another magic light that our eyes cannot see, but which we can feel as heat. These invisible rays of heat, which form so large a part of sunshine, have been given the name infrared light. Infrared light has no visual effect on our eyes. So in order to see its results, we must use a camera containing a special film which is sensitive only to infrared light. To furnish invisible light for the infrared camera, we will use these big electric units which produce no visible light at all. And now, for the first time on the motion picture screen, we are going to see a picture made entirely by infrared light in a dark room. There go the lights. And here is the picture taken by the infrared camera. And remember, to the eye, this girl is in total darkness. Infrared light is very penetrating in its effect. With it, for example, we can even take the young lady's picture while she's hiding behind a screen coated with rubber. The magic light shows that even a brand new shave isn't good enough when you are posing for the infrared camera. It digs right down and finds the whiskers that haven't even sprouted yet. Previews a shave 3 days in advance. Visible white light has also been put under control by science. A remarkable new device splits light into separate narrow rays so that the path of a beam can easily be followed. Notice that a light spreads out from its source in all directions. We can see how a mirror reflects light. How a prism bends the rays in different directions. And how light can even be bent around corners in tubes and pipes. Now let's see the effect of a simple reflecting surface used to control light. The rays leave their source, strike the reflector, and bounce back on themselves in the same path. Then if we place a lens like this in the path of the light, the rays are bent inward. Now let's try another type of lens, similar to the lens used in automobile headlights. Instead of bringing the rays together at a point, this lens bends them so they go out in parallel lines. In the motor car headlight, the new system of light control makes use of the type of reflecting surface called a parabolic reflector. No matter at what angle the light rays strike the reflector, they are bounced back in an even parallel path. The actual mechanics of this new headlamp are somewhat similar to previous two-beam lamps. When we are driving in the country, light from the central filament is used, and an intense beam of light is reflected straight ahead and far down the road. When we switch to the passing beam, another filament, only a few thousandths of an inch away, is lighted, and the beam is now aimed down and to the right of the road. A more accurate lens has been designed to direct light farther ahead in the driving beam, and more light on the right side of the road for the passing beam. Then the whole unit has been sealed airtight so that air and moisture, tarnish and rust cannot cut down its efficiency. And so today we drive with headlights that apply the latest principle of scientific light control. Headlights suited to the speeds at which we travel. On the high road, controlled light makes possible safe speed because we can always stop within the range of our own headlights. In city driving and in passing other cars on the highway, our controlled passing beam continues to light the right side of the road without shining in the other fellow's eyes. If we drive safely and always dim our lights when passing, we can take full advantage of the new control science has given us. And in the laboratories of today, science is working on the light of tomorrow, seeking still more numerous ways of using it to make life for all of us better and safer. Who knows what miracles are yet to come from the amazing development of visible and invisible light when the magic light of tomorrow comes into its own.
God is light, magic is afoot. God is alive, magic is afoot. God is afoot, magic is alive. Life is afoot, magic never died. God never sickened. Many poor men lied, many sick men lied. Magic never weakened, magic never hid. Magic always ruled. God is afoot. God never died. God was ruler, though his funeral lengthened, though his mourners thickened. Magic never fled, though his shrouds were hoisted, the naked God did live. Though his words were twisted, the naked magic thrived. Though his death was published round and round the world, the heart did not believe. Many hurt men wondered, many struck men bled. Magic never faltered, magic always led. Many stones were rolled, but God would not lie down. Many wild men lied, many fat men listened. Though they offered stones, magic still was fed. Though they locked their coffers, God was always served. Magic is afoot, God rules. Alive is afoot, alive is in command. Many weak men hungered, many strong men thrived. Though they boasted solitude, God was at their side. Nor the dreamer in his cell, nor the captain on the hill. Magic is alive. Though his death was pardoned, round and round the world, the heart would not believe. Though laws were carved in marble, they could not shelter men. Though altars built in parliaments, they could not order men. Police arrested magic, and magic went with them. For magic loves the hungry. But magic would not tarry. It moves from arm to arm. It would not stay with them. Magic is afoot. It cannot come to harm. It rests in an empty palm. It spawns in an empty mind. But magic is no instrument. Magic is the end. Many men drove magic, but magic stayed behind. Many strong men lied. They only passed through magic and out the other side. Many weak men lied. They came to God in secret, and though they left him nourished, they would not tell who healed. Though mountains danced before them, they said that God was dead. Though his shrouds were hoisted, the naked God did live. This I mean to whisper to my mind. This I mean to laugh with in my mind. This I mean my mind to serve till service is but magic moving through the world. And mind itself is magic, coursing through the flesh. And flesh itself is magic, dancing on a clock. And time itself, the magic length of God. Magic is afoot.
Suppose what Oscar believed in as he died, in spite of your protestations, suppose it's all true, and you walk up to the pearly gates and you are confronted by God. What will Stephen Fry say to him, her, or it?
I will basically, what's known as theodicy, I think, I'll say, bone cancer in children? What's that about? How dare you? How dare you create a world in which there is such misery that is not our fault? It's not right. It's utterly, utterly evil. Why should I respect a capricious, mean-minded, stupid God who creates a world which is so full of injustice and pain? That's what I would say.
And you think you're going to get in
no,
on that?
No, but I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to get in on his terms. They're wrong. Now, if I died and it was Pluto, Hades, and if it was the 12 Greek gods, then I would have more truck with it, because the Greeks were... They didn't pretend not to be human in their appetites and in their capriciousness and in their unreasonableness. They didn't present themselves as being all-seeing, all-wise, all-kind, all-beneficent. Because the God who created this universe, if it was created by God, is quite clearly a maniac. Utter maniac. Totally selfish. Totally. We have to spend our life on our knees thanking him? What kind of God would do that? Yes, the world is very splendid, but it also has in it insects whose whole life cycle is to burrow into the eyes of children and make them blind. They eat outwards from the eyes. Why? Why did you do that to us? You could easily have made a creation in which that didn't exist. It is simply not acceptable. So, you know, atheism is not just about not believing there's a God, but on the assumption that there is one. What kind of God is he? It's perfectly apparent that he is monstrous, utterly monstrous, and deserves no respect whatsoever. The moment you banish him, your life becomes simpler, purer, cleaner, more worth living, in my opinion.
That sure is the longest answer to that question that I ever got in this entire series.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Now, go find the others. .com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.